This is the Schnauzer Logic Radio Company.
And this is Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. This is episode number 34, being recorded on Wednesday. It is the 8th of November, 2006.
Groundbreaking, critically acclaimed, smash hits, HBO original series. And now, the HBO original series.
Schnauzer Logic.
Two hunters are out in the woods when one of them collapses. He doesn't seem to be breathing and his eyes are glazed over. The other man pulls out his phone and calls emergency services. He gasps to the operator, "My friend is dead, what can I do?" The operator is calm and soothing and says, "Take it easy, sir, I can help. First, let's make sure he's dead." There's silence and then a shot is heard. Back on the phone, the first hunter says, "Okay, now what?" That a good one?
That's a good one.
Oh, then we don't need to run her up. Okay, here we go.
Clinton, liberals, dittos.
I'm Dr. Mora, and I'm my poodle's mother.
Today on All Things Considered to Death, Moss.
Yeah, baby, show me your...
Son of East to my friends, Son of East and welcome! You have managed to tune in, latch on, and otherwise download that stream of bits known around the world as Schnauzer Logic. Yes, this is Schnauzer Logic, the podcast, and it's being recorded on Wednesday. It is the 8th of November, 2006. My name is Robin Goldstein. I'm your host. I'm your buddy. I'm your pal. I'm also a straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman patent attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning, and I am thrilled and delighted that each and every one of you are going to be with us for the next 2 hours. We got a great show for you today. We got, we really don't have very much.
We got very little, but
we got, yeah. we're kind of dry. Kind of run out a little bit.
Just a tad.
Just a little bit. Yeah. Jason's going to be here.
Good.
That's good.
That's great.
Sherry Stevens is here. Son of Easter, Sherry Stevens.
Son of Easter, Robin, and everyone else.
Parviz, not so much.
Parviz.
Can you do the Fandango? This is a, apparently this is the anniversary of the death of Parviz's dad.
Mm.
So they hold, like, I guess, a little memorial kind of thing. This is probably not the right music to be playing for that. Hey! Woo!
It should be a joyous celebration.
Like,
it should be a celebration
I'd
of someone's
life. I'd like this music
life.
At my funeral.
Okay.
I think we should play this. Well, what do you mean, okay?
We'll take notes.
You're going to be there? That's pretty cocky.
No, okay.
You're going before me for sure.
Okay, fine. Okay.
of course, our sympathies are with Parviz and his family today. So Parviz is not with us, but you're here. So we just said Son of Easter to you. On the phone is Sean Meehan. Let's say Son of Easter to Sean Meehan. Son of Easter, Sean Meehan.
Son of Easter.
Please, Son of Easter, please, Sean Meehan. I forgot the magic word. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
We're all here.
All of us.
We're all here. I was up very, very late. I was up again until almost 2 o'clock in the morning watching the election returns come in, waiting for George Makaka Allenstein
to finally give up.
Yeah, to finally give up. He hasn't. He hasn't. Which shows, once again, that Al Gore has more class than George Allen. Something I knew that you and I had been talking a lot about. Also, Godzilla and King Kong. I'm still going with Godzilla. It's the fire breathing thing. I don't know. I just can't quit it. I don't know.
He can strike from a distance.
That's true.
He's got the outside shot.
That's true. That's true. Although Kong does have the ladies. I'm doing I don't even know what the fuck I'm doing.
A lot of hand waving.
Anyhow, what do we got on today's show? We got Jason Nathanson on today's show. And that's it.
Okay.
And that's it. So, I don't know. This may be a 45-minute kind of expedition. We'll see. We'll have a lot of good fun, though. So, actually, what we're going to do today is we're going to play... because of last week's show, I pulled out some Woody Allen stand-up. You ever hear Woody Allen do stand-up?
I have never heard Woody Allen do stand-up.
And people who talk about comedy talk about, well, you know, of course, Woody Allen, you know, classic Woody Allen. And I thought, I don't know how many people have actually heard Woody Allen do stand-up. So we're going to play some Woody Allen stand-up today along with other stuff. So we got a good show, nothing to worry about. Let's check in first with Kip Adana, make sure that he's okay. Oh, he's a little low. Let's check in with him again. All right, Michael's whirling.
Stroke or unload.
All right, Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney suffered a big defeat yesterday, which makes Harry Whittington very happy. Whitney Houston, did she suffer a defeat this week?
No.
Okay.
Kiss my ass!
Sorry. And Sammy Jackson's very happy.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
And we have somebody new who's going to be checking in with us on a regular basis. Based on last week, I think that that Allie Waller needs to be with us on a weekly basis. So, ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for Allie Waller. I made that my ringtone, by the way. That's now my ringtone.
You know how to do
it's the little
like
things.
That baffles me.
And so I was sitting in a meeting. As a matter of fact, 2 days ago. It's a big high stakes negotiation with a Japanese company. They're on one side of the table. We're on the other side of the table. I got my game face on. You know, I put the little black charcoal under both eyes before I go in there because it's really tough. You know, and I'm like I'm taking no prisoners. I'm given no ground, and then in the middle of the meeting, you start to hear. And everybody's looking around. Like, and it's not the kind of thing that you. It's not like the old Nokia, you know, because that could be anybody, right? And so you start looking at the other people in the room. It's like, that must be your phone. It's not my phone. Is it my phone? Is it your phone? But this one. So I said, oh, it's European. I think it means something in French.
Free FM. Here you can be free.
I don't know what the hell that was. Sorry. So I realize we have a lot of really great little clips of sounds that we should use as ringtones. I mean, this one, of course, would be Parviz's favorite.
Acolytes, my friend.
And I think if you were in a place where you could get away with it, this would be a great ringtone.
Ah, oh, that's shit. It's shit. It's shit. It's shit.
So I want people to send me an email and let me know whether they. Is your phone ringing?
No, but I have a few ringtones that are programmed to.
Wait, that could be mine.
To particular people, and you know, my daughter works for Singular, and so when I first got my phone, she was very busy downloading tones and assigning them to people.
Okay,
and so. After the break, maybe we can play some of my ringtones.
Oh,
but
that'd
we'll
be,
do that.
That would be fun. That would be fun.
It'll give us a minute to prepare.
So in going through last week's program and doing the cleanup that I do, I noticed that sound from Allie, that's basically Allie telling us sort of the hack comedy rhythm, right? Which is, you know, what does it sound like, you know? And I thought, oh, that's perfect. So anyhow, so here I'm in the meeting and the thing is going off. And I sent her an email and I told her how funny it was. And she said, if we sell it and we make royalties, she'd like a little, you know, at least buy her a meal, you know, if not a piece of the action. And I thought, we have lots of them, so I think we should put together a little selection of Schnauzer Logic ringtones that we can make available on the website for people to download, and it could be like donationware. Like if you want to, you know, put a dollar into the PayPal account or something like that, that would be fine. What do ringtones go for? Are they about a buck a
piece?
They're
like 99 cents, I think.
But these are kind of amateur ringtones, right? So
32 cents.
Yeah, we could, okay, we could do a, I like that. I like that. So I hadn't even thought about it. I got this one too.
Are you still there? Are you still there? Are you still there? Are you still there?
So what I want people to do is to send an email. It is robin@schnauzerlogic.com, or you can call the phone number. It's area code 206-666-6540. And let me know what you'd like to see in a little package of ringtones. We'll put them together. Also, for me, on my phone, it's just an MP3 file. You know, small MP3 file. I don't know if it needs to be in a different format. So maybe Nicole can tell me.
She could.
What we need to do with that. You have ringtones on your phone there, Dr. Mia?
I just have my phone. Is like the last remnant of the brick phone style that...
the true
Wall
get smart.
Street, they're walking on the beach with that, like that giant kind of thing.
Is it a flip phone or is it an actual?
No,
like,
it's just like
it's the size of a normal phone receiver.
It's damn near that big.
Yeah.
I also like to use it as a self defense tool, and so it gives me like four different ringtones. I can either people can sound like. Pac-Man or asteroids. they can sound like space invaders.
Very modern stuff is what you're saying.
Yeah.
All the highest tech stuff. All right. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take, I think, our first break. We got to talk politics, though, right? I mean,
big day.
We
got to
avoid it.
We got to get to that. You voted yesterday over in Santa Cruz, yay?
Oh yeah.
Was there long lines where you were?
No, but there were a lot of people. We had a pretty big. It looked like they were set up for a lot of people. There were a lot of voting stations.
Okay.
In my precinct, there were a lot of people working the giving the. The ballots out and receiving them and what have you. So it was a well-oiled machine.
And how do you vote over there?
We had the option of a paper ballot or the computer voting. I opted for the paper ballot.
They offer you an option?
Yeah, we had an option.
Wow. And why did you opt for the paper ballot over the Diebold machine?
Paranoia.
Okay.
In a word?
Deep Destroyer. Wait a second. Write that down. How about you? How did you vote?
I actually had an absentee vote,
vote,
but I didn't because I'm a huge procrastinator. I didn't get it into the mail, so I had to drop it off at the polling place, which I actually like going to the I like going to the poll.
It makes us feel like Russia. You put on your babushka, everybody kind of hobbles over, and then somebody jumps out of you, and then somebody jumps out of them, and then somebody jumps out of them.
Well, it's kind of nice to go into the polls and see people talking, and this time around there was a lot of young people manning the polls, and then mm-hmm. a few but it's usually a lot of senior citizens that
really
are,
old people.
Yeah, yeah, so they're there strictly for the conversation. So that's kind of fun to.
And how do they vote in your particular precinct?
Well, they had the electronic machines.
They do, yeah.
And I'm sure they offered a paper ballot as well, but I just dropped off my envelope.
So there's no wait for you.
There was no wait.
I had to wait about 25 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah, I think they had seven machines, and I had to wait about 25 minutes. And they only Diebold. They didn't offer me a paper ballot. I like the electronic machines because for each office. The write-in candidate, if you push, there's on the screen, there's a button for write-in candidate for every office. If you push that, a little on-screen keyboard display shows up. And so, for any office that I didn't know who I wanted to vote for, I type my own name in. It's much harder to do that with a paper ballot. It becomes obvious very quickly that you're an annoying ass. but
electronically.
But electronically, that's part of the privilege of being an American.
It provided the cover of darkness you needed.
What I think is interesting is, like you, I actually could vote absentee ballot because I do all of my homework in advance. I kind of go through it. Here in California, we had 4 pages of material. I mean, not 4 pages of questions. I think there were 20 pages on the electronic machine. But when you actually have the handwritten ballot on both sides, it was on both sides of 2 large sheets of paper.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of stuff to vote for. And I think there are people that just kind of show up the day of And then they're trying to read it on the screen, and it makes sense of it, and it doesn't make, it just takes forever. So, I mean, for me, it was just like boom, 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 just getting in and getting out. But I was surprised that there were many young people, because usually that is the domain of senior citizens.
You bet.
Right? Once a year, they're there with, you know, their donuts and, you know, making you sign upside down.
They're
and,
having a good time.
I guess so.
Yeah.
I guess so.
I mean, and you think about it, you're seeing everybody in your neighborhood. That's the other thing that I kind of like about
That's true.
It is I'll run into neighbors that I haven't seen in a long time. And mm-hmm. so you can have a little chit-chat while you're waiting in line. And so that's kind of fun.
Well, I mean, here in the state of California, except for Arnold, who won by 2-1 margin. Yeah, well, yeah. Celebrity. I mean, the state went pretty much Democratic all the way down. And Jerry Brown, former governor, Moonbeam, dated Linda Ronstadt, mayor of Oakland. He's back, baby.
He is back, and I am glad.
Back
I
in Sacramento.
Like Jerry Brown. Yep.
He's a good guy,
he
I think.
He is a good guy.
Public servant for all these years.
You
I mean,
bet.
He's got it. He's kind of the Kennedy of the West. I mean, the VJ, the one who used to be on MTV, that woman with the glasses and... Oh, man. So, any big surprises in Santa Cruz? I don't know what the local elections were like over there.
No, I think that the most hotly, I don't know if it was hotly contested, the results seemed to be fairly good margin of loss. But there was an initiative here in the city of Santa Cruz to raise the minimum wage to something very near $10. It was $9 and something or other. And, I think that the proponents of that were surprised that they may not have gotten the college vote that they would have wanted.
Yeah.
So that went down to defeat there, and there were a lot of, I guess, local business people who were very active in this election cycle.
I know it would have shut KSCO down completely. If they had to pay the program director $10 an hour, that's... It's MITRE, I tell you, it's MITRE.
You're so mean.
All right, well, I want to get into some more of this when we get back. Tell you what, we'll take a break. We'll play a little tunage. The tunage today is all tunage we've played in the past. Kind of retro songs today for a couple of reasons, primarily being I didn't have enough time to go find any new songs, so we're going to play some of my old favorites. How's that sound?
I love it.
You don't really have a choice. Okay, And there you go. So we're going to take a little break. You were listening to Schnauzer Logic. It is episode number 34. Last week's show was a great show. We've somewhere along the last few weeks, we've now picked up an additional 100 downloads a week.
Cool.
Wow.
And I mentioned on the blog that Steve Golson, I don't think I said this on the air, but Steve Golson told me that the total amount of space that it took as of a week ago to download our show was 2 gigabytes. So I like to think of 2 billion served. For all you nerds out there, that's funny. For everybody else, not so much. All right, you're listening to Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein with Sherry Stevens here in the studio with me. Thanks so much for sitting in today.
Absolutely.
Sean Meehan is on the phone, and we'll be back on the other side after a little break. So we're asking you all to please stick around.
I want to know why you like to dress up like a girl sometimes.
This is Schnauzer Logic.
I know you got a melancholy heart that you have tried to keep from bleeding. I know you've been scared from the start, that's okay, but there's nothing you can do about it. Thank you.
feel that in every way, this new radio series offers an unusual opportunity to combine broad popular appeal with truly distinguished radio treatment.
Oh, and this one time, at band camp, I stuck a flute in my pussy.
Frisco!
Hello?
This is Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We're about 24 minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, host buddy and pal. Sherry Stevens, host buddy and pal. On the phone, Sean Meehan, host buddy and pal. www.schnauzerlogic.com. That is the website. robin@schnauzerlogic.com. That is the email address. We're also over on MySpace. It is myspace.com/schnauzerlogic. 206-666-6540. What am I leaving out?
Physical address?
No. I don't want to give that out.
No. Well, then I think you're done.
Am I done?
You're done.
All right. Let's punch down the button and see whether Dr. Meehan is still there. You still there, Sean?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Sherry has a ringtone.
I do.
Well, you can play one.
Well, will we pick it up?
Well, yeah, you have to put the back of it. So play the one for your ex-husband.
Everybody seems to like that. Okay, here we go.
Hello? Freaking idiot.
Little Napoleon Dynamite?
Little Napoleon Dynamite.
And your daughter put that in for you.
She did, and yeah. I didn't know that until he called one day in the middle of a meeting like yours. And then I look down and think, oh, I know who that is now.
Perfect. So for those of you just joining us on the stream, we, by the way, thanks once again, as always, to the folks over at TransFM for putting us on this stream. We're looking for suggestions for ringtones. I was playing, I'm popping the music back up again here. I'm doing stupid things. It's not your fault. I noticed that the conversation we had last week with Allie Waller, she generated a ringtone without even knowing it. So we're looking for suggestions, and you recommended Parviz's.
Yeah, his little ding 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 ding.
I think that's a
winner. I'm sure you've got plenty of
multiple takes of that one. How about you, Sean? What comes to mind for you?
You know, she stole it. Oh.
Great minds think alike.
And? You know, for me, the best part of doing that impression, of him doing that impression, is the sniff. And? I got some comments from people this week. I don't know that they appreciate that Parviz and I are really very good friends, and that I don't take it seriously. We don't agree about a lot of the stuff, obviously, but I don't take it seriously. I think people have gotten to a notion, and maybe this will bring us into the topics of politics, which is that if you disagree with someone, that means therefore that you hate them or disrespect them, and that's just not the case. At least in my life, that's not the case. How about you guys?
That's pretty much the case. I have to part ways with you there.
All right.
Well, I won't, because I think with a lot of people, you have to kind of agree to disagree in certain cases.
I said that once before, yeah.
Well, marriage is a lot like that. Marriage teaches you that lesson, I think. That,
yeah.
Marriage, as Aristotle once said about politics,
oh,
it's the art of the possible.
Say that again. I was stepping on you by saying I thought Aristotle was talking about his wife.
and I think he was, too.
Say it again.
And what was it?
That politics is the art of the possible. And marriage is kind of like that. So I think you sort of learn some of those lessons from marriage. That there are places where you're going to have to agree to disagree, and then otherwise you stay the course.
1,000 points of light. Wouldn't be prudent. So for folks, whether they're over here, whether they're in the United States or around the world, listening to the show, you realize that there was a quite stunning rebuke, if you will, of the current administration's policy with respect to the conflict in Iraq. I don't think you can point to anything else except that one thing. People have decided that they're tired of this. I don't know whether it's Americans don't have
the
stomach.
I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
They don't have the stomach for the war, mm-hmm. but they don't have the stomach for what they perceive as being the incompetence of how the war is being conducted. And they went to the polls, and although it wasn't actually a referendum, they decided to turn it into a referendum.
Yeah.
And vote the bastards out. Sean? What say you, Sean Meehan?
I agree. I mean, I think that one of the things that I perceived is sort of fanciful about the president's press conference this morning was his sense that, and I think that this will probably be part of the Republican narrative about what happened, is that there were a vast array of reasons as to why it is that the Democrats, you know, tsunamied the elections. And I just don't think that there are a vast array of reasons. I think that there are primarily two reasons. One is corruption. There have been lots and lots and lots, for those of you outside this country, there have been lots and lots and lots of members of the administration and of our Congress and our Senate that have been scrutinized, you know, for corruption, and some of them have actually gone to jail and left their offices.
Which is surprising, even in a friendly environment. It's not as though we had the House and the Senate on different sides of the aisle, and therefore you had one side keeping oversight over the other.
No,
the House,
no.
The Senate, and the White House are all the same party, and so for folks to get kind of picked off in this administration, you have to be really bad or really stupid.
And I think we've had plenty of both. And that fact and the incompetent operation of the war in Iraq and the Hurricane Katrina debacle mm-hmm. of a little over a year ago, I think that there were big, broad themes about governance here. I don't think it was, well, this guy was more popular than this guy in this district, and that guy was, you know, pro-water conservation, and this other guy wasn't in that district, and that was a big thing. And all these things just sort of coincidentally combined into a vast move toward the Democratic Party. I think there were basic themes.
And in fact, one of the things that I heard last night, close to 2 a.m., because as I mentioned, I was up all night, was... No incumbent Democrat lost.
Right.
In any election across the country. No incumbent Democrat lost. And I don't tend to vote along party lines. I don't actually think of myself as a Democrat. I have a lot of problems with the Democratic Party. I'm probably an independent. I think more and more people think of themselves as being independent. And yet, I thought I needed to send a message. And I couldn't vote for Pat Buchanan. In the past, that's how I sent a message. I voted for Pat Buchanan. That was my message. And the message was very simple. I'm crazy! But this time, I couldn't send that message. So the message was, I just want, you know, I want to rid the rascals, right? New broom sweeps clean or something like that. And then we used to chew some gum and when we would kick the can. And I don't know. Anyhow, I have no idea what I'm talking about today. But I want to get our good friend on the line here because we got a lot of stuff to talk about with him as well. So let's play his theme music and we'll get him on here. Hope he's still there. Ooh, here it comes.
I bought a bourgeois house in the Hollywood Hills with a trunk load of $100,000 bills. Man came by to hook up my cable TV. We settled in for the night, my baby and me. We switched round and round till half past dawn. There was 57 channels in
the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van.
57 channels in
the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van.
57 channels in
the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van.
57 channels in nothing.
Actually, if you go to his website, randomshow.blogspot.com, he's got his bar mitzvah photograph up there.
Oh.
wasn't bald then. Let's say son of Easter to Jason Nathanson. Welcome to Schnauzer Logic, my friend.
Thank you, Robin. I, too, also have a Parviz-style ringtone on my phone. It goes, Jason, how's your grandma?
Have you captured that and made it a ringtone?
No, but I just thought of that now. And I
that's
think
a
I
request.
Will.
All right, I'm writing that one down. Jason, 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 JJJ, Grandma. All right.
And that's actually become a catchphrase on my blog. Somebody posted with that comment today.
Did they really? They said Jason, Jason, Jason.
So you're sweeping the world here in the comment
Jason,
section
Jason.
Of my blog.
It may just be Jason, Jason. Jason, yeah. Jason, Jason, Jason. That's another one, actually.
And Parviz, Parviz.
Parviz, Parviz. And he's so worried. He's so funny. We got an email earlier in the week. I think I sent it around to some of you guys from one of our listeners in the UK. I don't have it in front of me here, so I forgot the name. But it was one of our listeners in the UK. It's lovely that we have listeners around the world. They were having some problems with the iTunes Music Store, and they weren't able to hear what was going on. And then we got an email from Allie, et cetera, et cetera. And so I forwarded these things on to Parviz. Parviz, the only thing he cares about is that they spelled his name wrong. isn't there a statute of limitations on getting the shit kicked out of you in elementary school? I mean, don't you have to get over it at some point? My sister and I are now in the process. We've actually closed the sale, and we're getting ready to... We signed the contract and ready to close the sale on the house that I grew up in the Central Valley, New York, in the lower Hudson Valley of New York State. The house that I grew up in from the age of 10 until the age of, 18, and then back and forth all the time. We're selling it to a guy that used to live across the street, and when I was a kid, he was part of a group of kids that used to beat the crap out of me for being Jewish. I mean, like daily. Like I would have to run every day. I mean, thank God I was able to eventually drive, because that was otherwise I'd still be beaten up. I mean I'm sure of that. And so in my mind I realized, listen, when I was a kid you used to beat the crap out of me for what I think were anti-Semitic reasons, and now we're adults and okay, fine. I'm not gonna ask for an apology. This is a transaction, you kinda get over it, We're not gonna be bosom buddies, but we're gonna kinda get it done, and that'll be fine, and we'll kind of move forward.
Can't you write that into the legal contract
no,
of the house?
No, I don't really care about it. No, I'm happy that he wants to buy the house. It's a fair price, and he'll, turn it around, and somebody will live there, and it'll be a good thing. But
and that's the guy I met, right? When I was there.
Yes, that's the guy that you met.
And he's a nice guy, and you guys seem to get along well.
Well, that's because I'm an attorney, and I can bullshit with the rest. I mean, I don't have any animosity now. The fact that I'm transgender has nothing to do with all the things that happened to me when I was... nothing. I'm telling you, nothing. So let's talk a little bit about politics down in the Southland. You're in Arnold country. Jason, what happened down there?
Well, we had record high voter turnout. I think they're estimating 55 to 60% of voters, which is great for a midterm election here in L.A. It went predictably Democrat in the Los Angeles area and conservative in the outlying areas, Orange County, San Bernardino, Riverside, and stuff like that. And it really came down along the lines that it came down along in the 2004 election. A lot of anti-war sentiment, a lot of pro-Democrat sentiment, and it was interesting to me because you see the governor of California, Arnold Schwarzenegger, getting elected, who is, somewhat of a Bush Republican, but then you have the sweeping Democratic move come in, and we're a schizophrenic state, especially between the top half California in the bottom half of California.
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, I think Schwarzenegger he's not really a Bush Republican as he is an opportunist. I mean, he ran very...
And I would say the whole Bush administration, they're a bunch of opportunists as well.
Well, but I think that... Well, I don't actually know that I agree with that. I think that they actually are ideologues, and they have an agenda, and I think that, quite frankly, Schwarzenegger likes he likes the power. I think it's for him. It's all about the power. And
that's definitely part of it. I mean, he's got a huge ego. He's a movie star, and he wants the respect. And to be quite frank, when he came in, a lot of people were worried about, is this another Jesse Ventura? But if you followed him and watched his speeches and watched his press conferences and the way he seems to be able to handle the politics, I mean, like the minute details of budgets and things like that, he seems to know what he's talking about and at least have an idea of what he's doing. Compared to most people it would be hard for most people who aren't a politician all their lives to just step into this role of governor of the largest state in the country. So he he seems to know what he's doing, but he definitely does jump between, you know, the left and the right, and finds his middle ground somewhere in the center.
Well, and I think that's what he is. I think he's an opportunist and a populist. He got slapped down very hard on the ballot initiatives on the last ballot around,
and then was a good boy. And then was a good boy.
And then he was a good boy, right? And he's like, okay, well, I won't do that because I really want to get reelected.
Yeah.
Do you think it's fair to say that he holds the idea that at some point he might be able to run for president?
No. I don't think he believes that they're going to change the Constitution of the United States just for him. But he, you know, he's going to ride.
Well, for him and Mike Gardner.
And Arianna Huffington, too. But I don't think that's what he aspires to or thinks is realistic. I think he'd be happy to if he could, but I don't think he really that's a realistic goal of his.
So part of what the this election means is that we're going to have the first woman Speaker of the House. And I'm curious what you guys think that that means, because it's sort of talked about in passing, but, you know, not very long ago, that would have been a very significant event. Is it because Hillary's considered the titular Democratic frontrunner, and therefore a female Speaker of the House doesn't seem like such a big deal? Because, quite frankly, if she in fact becomes Speaker of the House, she's third in line behind Alexander Haig.
Well,
it's a very old joke for people who are smart enough to remember the Nixon administration, but anyhow.
I think it's not such a big deal to a lot of people here in California. I mean, we're used to, I mean, look at our two senators, Feinstein and Boxer, two of the most outspoken and strongest women in the Senate. And it's not such a big ideal to have women in power, but I think for the rest of the country, who really might not even know much about Nancy Pelosi or know who she is, I think they're sweating a little.
What's your perception? And do you think it has an impact on your daughters?
Well, you know, I think that we have become so accustomed to seeing women in positions of power, and, you know, certainly trying to set good role models for my daughters. I don't see it as a, you know, we just don't see it as such an issue that someone like someone in the, you know, another in Arizona might, or another
ain't
story.
No thing.
It doesn't seem like a big deal.
Gotcha.
I think they feel that they're very capable. I'll be curious to know really how the Senate and everybody else reacts to all this, as you know, once we, you know, everything's back in session, and you know, just to see how well she performs.
That's definitely, absolutely going to be the telling point, because when in 94, when Newt Gingrich and the Republicans took control, a lot of people didn't like what they did, especially, you know, with the contract with America and things like that. But they tried to do something, and they were semi-successful in getting their agenda out there. The Democrats need to do something this time and not just play opposition politics and try to block whatever Bush is trying to do. They need to actually be proactive. And if they are, that could be great things for the 2008 election.
Well, but they actually have something to be proactive about. I mean, we've got this big thing for them to do something about.
The war?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, huh?
But that's something I don't think that they're going to be too successful in doing much about.
Why? They control the power of the purse. I mean, they control all the appropriations.
But it's so unpopular
if you've been married, you realize
it's so unpopular to vote against funding for a war that we're sitting in. And I think that their polls are going to tell them that that's not the way to go. So they might be very outspoken, but when it actually comes to doing something about the war, I'll be very surprised if anything actually gets accomplished. I think we'll see some domestic, you know, agenda things like minimum wage being raised. But when it comes to the war,
wow,
I'm kind of skeptical about something actually being accomplished.
I'm a little on board with Jason on this, just because think of how long the Vietnam War went under the Nixon administration, a very unpopular war, and had the adversary party in both houses of Congress. So there is some mechanism historically by which a chief executive can maintain an unpopular war against Congress,
against the wishes
of Congress.
But Nixon had Kissinger, who continued to whisper in his ear. And, I mean, today the president jettisoned Don Rumsfeld, and fairly ignominiously as well.
Yeah.
And so who's whispering in his ear? I mean, who's left to...
I'm assuming Dick Cheney. He's the moron whisperer.
Well, he has he still has Karl Rove. He still has Richard Pearl and a lot of Wolfowitz and a lot of the guys who, you know, wrote the original Doctrine. And now with this new guy stepping in as the former CIA director, as Secretary of Defense, you know, there's a lot of talk of bringing James Baker back. And him having a lot of control. And
yeah, but so. Baker and Gates.
The war,
Baker and Gates were against the war, so
right.
This ought to be a really
Baker
interesting.
Baker was Bush 1, and Bush 1 decided that going into Baghdad was a
bad idea.
Not prudent.
Not prudent. Wouldn't be prudent. Right, and that's the way to go. So, speaking of which, since we were gone, I mean, we've spent a lot of time talking about comedy in the last week, so I figured we can do a little politics today before we get to the rest of the show. They announced, I guess, on Monday that or over the weekend that Saddam Hussein has been sentenced to be hanged.
Yes, and the quicker the better. Before he can say anything.
Does that seem barbaric to anyone except me?
No, I'm with you on that page.
Yeah.
I'm anti death penalty, and even for the cruelest of people. That's not to say, like, if I was around during the time of Hitler and I ran into him on the street during the Holocaust, that I wouldn't have killed him myself. But
at a Starbucks getting a caramel macchiato?
Yeah. There, that guy looks like Hitler.
Yo, Adolf. Woo!
But I think the thought of sentencing somebody to death, I think it's a lot better for us and for the people of Iraq and, you know, for everybody who's been hurt or touched by him, that he rot in jail, that he sit in Abu Ghraib or, you know, somewhere and for the rest of his life. Think about what he needs a long time out.
you need to think about what you've done. Community service.
Hey, where are the women dictators?
He's got to pick up all the improvised explosive devices along the highway.
With an orange vest on and a pair of the little yellow earplugs and like the runaway housewife.
Right? Yeah.
Mow the sides of the lawn. It was either Newsweek or Time or some magazine had a listing of... despotic dictators of the last, whatever years. And you've got Pol Pot, obviously, and Idi Amin Dada, and Suharto, is that right? And
yeah.
And there are no women. Where are the women despots? Anyone.
We won't have true equality.
Excuse me?
We won't have true equality until we get some women despots.
But, I mean, do you think it's that women simply aren't capable, or they just haven't had the opportunity to get in the game?
Well, we have to see what Nancy Pelosi does. I mean, she could rise up. She's a great female dictator.
I hadn't thought about that. I see, like, a bloodless coup in the middle of the night. She'll use Danny Hastert as cover.
And he can cover. I saw him in Washington. He can cover a lot of people. By the way, speaking of Bush and Rumsfeld and the whole thing today, I just have to comment, being a media insider, I was at work when everything happened and, you know, writing the news. And the whole morning, up until about 9 o'clock when Pelosi had her press conference, it was all about the Democrats winning, you know, how big this is for the country and things like that. Then the second they dropped the hint that Bush was going to fire Rumsfeld or that Rumsfeld resigned, that immediately took up the whole news cycle. And then from basically 9:30 on, we focused on nothing else but Rumsfeld and his resigning. So I think that's a pretty masterful stroke on the part of the Bush administration to control the news cycle. Even though it's not the best story for them, it got the story of the Democrats taking power off the front page.
All right, but here's a question that I have for you. Clearly, he did not go to Gates today at 9:30 and say to
him... Oh, no, absolutely not.
Okay, so this has been in the works for a while.
Yeah.
So if it's been in the works for a while, A, why the fuck didn't he announce it before the election to shore up support for Republicans? Because my guess is they might have been able to keep the Senate in that way, right? They could have pushed people
right
over. And two, why did he come out publicly last week and do a kind of a Donnie Baby, you're doing a heck of a job? What the fuck was going on there?
The only explanation, and I have that exact same thought, is that they must have done internal polling to see whether or not that would have affected their chances in this election. And it must have come back, you know, if you keep Rumsfeld or, you ditch him later, that it's not going to affect anything now. That's the only thing that I can think of.
I was surprised. I mean, Jason's explanation is as good as any, but maybe the thought was the reverse. You know, I'm not necessarily espousing this as being the case, but maybe they didn't poll and find out that the loss of Rumsfeld wouldn't significantly aid their chances. Maybe the belief was, hey, I'd like to keep Rumsfeld, so let's see how badly we do. And if we don't do too badly, you know, I don't want to jettison Rumsfeld and then find out that we were going to be able to have that big Rove get out the vote push, and we were only going to lose 12 seats in the House and 3 seats in the Senate, and everything was going to be hunky-dory. It may have been a scenario something like that. I don't know.
Also, I think the Army Times call for his resignation came, I believe, this weekend. That was probably the tipping point, and, you know, a little too late for them to do anything about it before the election.
Yeah, it would have looked desperate, I think, had he done something precipitous like that right after that that particular revelation.
And
yeah.
And keeping with your media theme here, I don't know if you noticed this over on Drudge, but this morning Limbaugh came on and basically said, "Thank God, now I don't have to carry water for these guys anymore, and I've just basically been chilling for these guys, and I don't think they deserve to be in office." And I mean, this
really?
Guy, he's fucking shameless. Oh yeah,
that's news to me.
Oh yeah, it's on his. You go to Drudge. I mean, it was a developing story with a little police, you know, woo woo thing. Anyhow,
I believe that's what he's been feeling for a while. I think Sean Hannity also feels the same way. I was listening to him
today.
No,
I don't think Hannity's. No, I don't think so. I think Hannity's really stupid. Limbaugh, I think, actually is smart.
I would agree. Limbaugh is smart. Hannity's also very smart. I mean, you don't get to where he is by not being smart. I think he's also a slimy, sneaky bastard.
I think it's more slimy, sneaky, because I've heard that too often used to, frankly, defend Bush. You know, oh, you got to have some brains to get... No, I'm not sure you do.
No.
I think you have to do favors for the right people at the right time.
That's it.
Yeah, but Hannity has been more manipulative of the media, and he's really positioned himself well and gotten in. I mean, you watch him, and he goes, like, during the Terry Schiavo thing.
Are you
he
looking
went to
for...
Florida for 3 weeks. And, you know, he put himself there on purpose to try to take hold of this issue. And he does that on purpose. So I think it's a combination.
Hey, listen, I spent the afternoon watching a squirrel run around my backyard trying to hide nuts in the ground, but I don't think that's very smart. I mean, it's a survival instinct. I voted for the squirrel, but that's just me. That's just me. I'm big on the nuts party. All right, here's what we're going to do. We'll take a break. You guys can both hang with us, yes?
Yeah, sure.
All right, we'll take a break, and we'll come back, play a little tunage, and maybe talk a little TV, all right?
Sounds good.
I feel badly because for the last couple of weeks we haven't gotten to a Heil Honey, I'm Home. It's like those guys, it's like the guys from Modesto, the band Nothing Less that we didn't play. So tell you what we're going to do. We're going to play Nothing Less. We're going to play the guys from Modesto. All right. And then we'll come back and talk some more with Jason Nathanson is on the line with us. Sean Meehan is on the line with us. Shay Stevens, thanks very much. He's sitting across the table from me. And you, we're all asking you to please stick around.
Around for more Schnauzer Logic.
away. Tricks away.
More fun than flushing the toilet while your spouse is in the shower.
Oh, sorry.
Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We're, I don't know, just about ready to start the second hour of Schnauzer Logic, the podcast being recorded on Wednesday. It is the 8th of November, 2006. Robin Goldstein, host buddy and pal. Straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual and pad attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning. That should be my ringtone.
That should be your ringtone.
Okay.
Or my ringtone when you call.
Who would want? Oh, that's true. Yeah, but how many people in the audience might get a call? I mean, that would be fine.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Like, I have Sherry Baby on mine for when you call me, and I have the plumber is the man for when Parviz calls me.
That's good.
But that's because we know each other. But of the 1,000 people who listen every week, I don't know how many of them I'm going to be calling. all right, let's see. Let's punch down the button here and see if they're still there. Son of Easter, my friends.
Son of Easter. Son of Easter.
All right, so let's talk a little television. First of all, what do you know about the not the West Wing, but the Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip?
I know nothing more than, I guess, the average person. There's two more episodes that have definitely been purchased. This week they did a kind of cliffhanger two-part special with John Goodman, which I actually really enjoyed, harking back to a lot of kind of West Wing type action and storylines and things like that. But I think if they were smart, they would have done the To Be Continued as their third and final show that was ordered. That way there would have been a clamoring of support. Oh, you got to put the last one on, and people calling NBC and hopefully, you know, burning down their doors. But we'll see, you know, we'll see. I don't have high hopes for it sticking around for much longer.
Now, on the companion show, it's not really a companion, but 30 Rock, which people have sort of praised. You know, what's interesting is Studio 60 was critically praised, but then began to be destroyed as the ratings were not what they needed to be. The 30 Rock, which I thought was horrible, people were praising as it went on. It's getting better and better, and yet its ratings are like even lower than Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip. It's pulling in crap. It's pulling in six, seven million.
I get a little bit of enjoyment out of that show. I mean, yeah, the first one I saw, there were, you know, maybe 4 or 5 laughs, and there seemed to be getting more. And I like the characters, surprisingly. I like F.A. Alec Baldwin has definitely carved a niche for himself as this character. He's the same guy in The Departed, the same guy in Along Came Polly. I mean, he's just this kind of cantankerous, low-speaking, abrupt boss.
You've moved again. We can't hear you. You're breaking up.
Son of a bitch, this fucking phone, I swear to God. I think it's Singular's fault. Or maybe Bush is tapping my phone.
I don't think anybody in the administration cares what you have to say.
Probably not, but I like to think they do.
Okay.
Sense of self-importance.
Okay. But I mean, they're moving 30 Rock together with Scrubs, right, which is coming back from its little hiatus. And
right.
They're pushing it together with two other comedies. They're going to make Thursday this kind of NBC must-see comedy Thursday thing again. And I don't know that Studio 60, I mean, 30 Rock is strong enough to be able to carry that off. The other thing, have you noticed that the woman who used to be on Ally McBeal, she's gone from the last couple of episodes?
Oh, really?
I had noticed that because I haven't actually watched it, I think, the past 2 weeks.
I see. Well, it's good to know that you're a Nielsen family, you fuck, and you're screwing up the schedule here. All right, what do you want to talk about this week?
You know what? One show that we haven't touched on at all is Lost, which came back, I think, 3 or 4 weeks ago. And that was a show I've always been a big fan of. But at this point, it's so frustrating to watch because they just dole out little hints of this overall arching story plan that they might or might not have for the characters. And I liken it to trying to tell a blind person, how to do a Rubik's Cube over the telephone. It's that frustrating to watch this show.
Right. That's frustrating.
Because
I've done that. I used to do that for a living.
And I actually used to be a blind person that made a living by doing Rubik's Cubes on the telephone. I got paid 2 cents for one that I finished. So, how about you, Sherry?
I have no call. I can't go there.
Okay. Too painful?
Too painful.
Okay.
During the break, Jason and I were talking about a similar phenomenon that occurred in the 90s with The X-Files, where it was fairly clear that those conspiracy, the grand conspiracy episodes, not the Monster of the Week episodes, but the grand government, Greys, you know, that sort of conspiracy episodes, that they grew kind of organically. And there was, I don't think at any time anyone really understood what the conspiracy was exactly, but they always left enough threads out in the story so that you could build more episodes. And I think people eventually became very frustrated with that, and I think to a significant extent that led to the downfall of that program after many successful seasons.
So what you're saying is that you guys actually had a better conversation while we were in the break than you did while we were on the air.
I'm still pissed that my Rubik's Cube joke failed so badly. If Sean would have said it, you guys would have been peeing in your pants.
Well, it would have been
said it in this kind of delivery that would have been, you know, dry and laconic.
I think the problem is that your Ubik's Ub Oak was not able to erd.
What?
Exactly. Well, I mean, does anybody here watch Lost? Do you watch Lost?
I have never watched Lost.
I've never watched Lost either.
It's certainly a media darling show.
It's on tonight, so, well, I mean, people aren't going to hear the stream until tomorrow, so that doesn't do a whole lot of good for
them. But you can pull all these things down as torrents. I mean, so they're all available on the internets all the time, and...
on the internet.
Yeah, and I guess it's not the style of programming that I like, right? It's funny because, you know, if you looked at CBS 10 years ago, you could tell what their audience demographic was all about, right? I mean, old people is a nice way of putting it, but all those, right? And I think
Murder, She Wrote, right.
Yeah, it was Murder, She Wrote, and it was, but the whole string of shows, I mean, it wasn't, Murder, She Wrote was kind of what you would think about, but it was the people who were on 60 Minutes would then go watch the programming that were on the rest of CBS for the rest of the week. And it was funny that Letterman was there because he was really out of his element at that point. Now they're trying to do a little bit more hip stuff. ABC seems to me to be kind of very skewed towards women, right? Younger women, I would say women in their 20s and 30s, who are middle class. Probably, you know, educated, maybe working, but they all want to have families. Probably not, you know, career women who would sort of, you know, put children to the side. I mean, these are women that want to have children. I mean, you look at the dancing with the Lost members of Grey's Anatomy. I mean, that's, they're all the same show over and over again. Prove me wrong.
I really can't. I mean, that's definitely the niche that they've carved out. But, you know, NBC carved out the comedy niche, and, you know, they don't have a whole lot of really good comedies. I think networks are ever-evolving, and, you know, the heads of networks are certainly ever-evolving and being changed every couple of years. And I think nobody's really figured out how to position themselves to take over the market fully. NBC was once the king of all networks, and now they're, you know, languishing behind Fox. And then CBS has this remarkable success with, you know, mediocre comedies and crime scene shows. So, I don't know what the thinking is behind the networks, and I don't think they know the thinking about what's going to get ratings and what's going to do well. I think they try to throw things against the wall and see what sticks, And they certainly had a hit with Alias, and J.J. Abrams was the creator of that, and then he created Lost for them, so they ran with it. But, you know, Lost is doing a good job of pissing off its viewers a lot, which is evidenced by next week they're going to do their season finale, and then they're not going to come back until March, I think it is. So they're doing kind of a Sopranos thing. And as a faithful viewer of the show, that makes me very upset.
I just noticed the eerie similarity, as Jason says, that CBS is enjoying phenomenal success with mediocre comedies and crime scene shows. And I thought, how very different from the success NBC experienced just a few years ago with their line of mediocre comedies and Law and Order programs. Maybe there is nothing new under the sun, huh, Jason?
So let's get to that thing on YouTube that you were talking about.
Yes. So a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about Smith and Kidnap, two shows that have been canceled already this season. I'm searching for other shows that have been canceled very quickly and found a list of shows that have been canceled after only airing once.
All right.
The king of these shows was a sitcom aired in 1990 in the UK on the Sky Network. And the basic premise was that Hitler was living next door to some Jews. And it was a 1950s-style sitcom, and it was supposed to be a takeoff on, you know, I Love Lucy and the typical American sitcom with a really obnoxious laugh track and the audience clapping every time the characters came in. And the name of it was Heil Honey, I'm Home.
Here's what I think is so wonderful. You said Hitler, and Sherry's eyebrows raised. Just, I mean, even
it's a sitcom about Hitler.
No, she didn't. But she didn't know what you were going to say. She's just listening intently. I'm sitting across from her here in the studio. You said Hitler, and just ever so slightly, her eyebrows raised up. still a powerful name. The Fighting Hitlers.
I would have been on the pitch meeting of that show because it's just so bizarre.
Want me to play the theme?
Yes, let's
play
the theme.
I'll play the theme. Hold on. Here we go.
Heil Honey.
Heil Honey.
Heil Honey.
Heil Honey.
Heil Honey.
Hello.
I'm home.
Heil Honey.
Heil Honey.
Smile, honey. Because I'm home. Gee, it's great to be Top Gun, but it's nothing like the fun that I get when I say Heil Honey, I am home.
Heil Honey.
Heil Honey.
Smile, honey.
Gee, it's great to be back.
Hi,
honey, I'm home.
All right.
What were they thinking? I mean, what was? Where was the storyline?
Boundaries of good taste, you know, for comedy. But when you try to soften the image of Hitler, it just doesn't work for me.
Well, but here's the obvious question, and I'm sure that people in the audience are asking it right now, and that is, how is this any different from the producers? The Mel Brooks comedy, right, with Zero Mostel and Gene Wilder back from the 60s, back in that time when the subject matter was to make a musical about Hitler, right? Springtime for Hitler.
Right.
And not only was that not rebuked, it's so fucking successful that they turned it into a Broadway musical that broke all the records, and then they turned the musical back into a movie,
but apparently they're
going to make another musical out of.
I think that show was about the absurdity of trying to make a show so bad nobody would come to see it.
Right.
And this?
And that's just about making a sitcom nobody will see, but they actually tried to air it.
Yeah, it's as if someone really tried to make Springtime for Hitler. It's like Andrew Lloyd Webber got together with whoever.
Well, Mel Gibson, I'm guessing. All right, I got a little clip. Should I play the clip from the show? Do you want to set it up?
Well, punch it in so me and Sean can hear it this time.
You have no... Oh, fuck you, dude. Matt, when you buy a good fucking phone so that we can hear you every week instead of... I mean, Sean sounds like he's sitting in the room with us here, and you're like... you sound like Michael J. Fox.
I had every intention of going and buying a landline, but I just forgot.
Uh-huh. Forgot. All right, here you go.
Honey, I'm home.
Heil, honey, me.
What did I do now? Oh, tonight you were making schnitzel. What a joke. You must be real mad at me, honey. I'm a very, very bad Hitler. Come here, baby.
Don't touch
touch me. You've been late for your dinner every night this week.
Ava, babe, please. I'm the Fuhrer.
Nice editing job there, dude, by the way.
Is it Jackie Gleason that's playing the part?
Who's... Thanks for doing a little fade out instead of just, wait. So, you the whole thing is available on your website.
If you go to randomshow.blogspot.com. And that's one of the points I wanted to make with this is that's the magic of YouTube. Because the second I saw this, I found it on Wikipedia, the description of it. And the first thought was, I have to see this. And immediately I typed it into Google and boom, showed up right on YouTube.
How much longer is it going to be there? I mean, you know, this resource. How much longer is that going to be there? Because there's a copyright on this. It's owned by probably Sky Broadcasting, which is now owned by Murdoch. So, you know, now that there's actually some money behind YouTube, I mean, you know that they've been pulling down clips left and right. Comedy Central pulled down all of their clips.
Yeah. That's only right. I mean, this happened with music and downloading and Napster in the infancy of that. And now we're getting into the TV version of it. And that's what's going to happen. Hopefully not. It'll drive the networks to put more of their stuff on YouTube as kind of, an incentive to watch their shows. There'll be more good content.
It doesn't make any sense. They won't put stuff on YouTube. They'll put stuff on their own websites because they want to drive you to their website rather than driving to YouTube where they're selling advertising. Now, I'm afraid to talk to you about this because I don't want to be kippa-dotted by you by talking about Napster and YouTube, but it seems to me that this is very different than Napster. Napster was sharing of complete copyrighted material. I mean, you didn't get a clip of the song. You got the whole fucking song, right? And as high a quality as you can possibly get. YouTube, quite honestly, the video quality sucks. Mm-hmm. And so people are using it to spread around. I don't think anything on there is usually longer than 2 or 3 minutes. There may be longer things on there, but that's not the model for YouTube. The reason it's so successful is people are clipping out the stuff that they think is choice and prime, right? Not the entire thing.
And I think there's a future for YouTube because a lot of the more successful stuff is user-generated. You know, it's the guy sitting in his basement lip-syncing to some weird Swedish techno song.
I have a link to that on my webpage, as a matter of fact.
if that's what's popular, there's no copyright on stuff like that. So,
there is, actually. Being an intellectual property attorney, actually, there is a copyright on that. It's just that people put it up there are the authors, and they probably don't care.
Well, there you go.
But you're more of that generation. I've been talking to folks. They get a lot of their entertainment from YouTube. If YouTube is no longer the place to go to get the clips that you're looking for, will you go someplace else? I registered the domain WTube.
Very good.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, hopefully that does well for you, and you know it might.
Well, I just registered it. I didn't put anything there yet.
Okay.
maybe I'll put the ringtones there.
There you go.
Maybe that's what we'll do. We'll put the ringtones over on wyoutube.com. That's what we'll do.
That's great.
We'll put them over there. Okay. Thanks for helping on that. But I mean, don't you think that information wants to be free? Who said that?
I no, not really. I mean,
well, okay, we're done. Sean,
why does the cage bit thing?
Who said information wants to be free?
I don't know.
Please, somebody, talk among yourselves. carry on the conversation. I'm going to look it up.
Speaking of driving people toward their own websites, that's exactly that model is exactly what NBC did with its 30 Rock premiere. I didn't see it on television. I watched it on the NBC website where they had the premiere episode. It posted in its entirety for free. And I assume that you're probably right, Robin, I'm assuming that will be the model for people with programming that they want to support on a sort of grassroots level.
Information Wants to Be Free is attributed to Stuart Brand, who was the person who wrote the Whole Earth catalog. At the first Hackers Conference in 1984. On the one hand, information wants to be expensive because it's so valuable. The right information in the right place just changes your life. On the other hand, information wants to be free because the cost of getting it out is lower and lower all the time. So you have these two fighting against each other. You just learned something that you didn't know. And now you know what you didn't know and you didn't know what you knew.
Stuart Brand.
We should make sure that Doug knows about that for the Jeopardy that he may be doing. So, I mean, you think information does want to be free. I don't think it's a surprise that we see these sites pounding up again and again and again. And I think, quite frankly, if there's nothing of value to see on YouTube, then it'll go away. Like Six Degrees, like all these other meme spaces that are not that interesting. And so if there's nothing of if there's no content, then people don't go there. What do you think comes next? And how do we make money at it?
Well, I think, there's definitely room on iTunes, the iPod stuff, free content. I just actually, for this week, got my first iPod, and I'm a little behind the times on that.
Congratulations.
But I spent a lot of time going around on there trying to get good videos and stuff like that because I got the video one. And there's really not a lot. I mean, you can get TV shows and stuff that you pay for, but when it comes to the free content, it really kind of sucks. And one that I was really looking forward to listening to was the Ricky Gervais podcast.
Yeah,
which was supposed to be, the big hit, and it's really nothing more than a Schnauzer Logic ripoff. I mean, they have a guy that's like Parviz that everybody just kind of rips on,
Carl Pilkington.
And that's the basis for the show, and it's semi amusing, but I don't think I'm going to get more episodes of it.
Bless you for saying that it's a Schnauzer Logic ripoff, because I've listened to it. I'm a huge fan of Gervais, and when I heard the program, I thought, well, that's just fucking the show that we're doing. I mean,
it's nothing more than your show.
Not even as good production values.
Exactly. Your show is more highly produced than that one.
Okay. We got the music fading up in the background, which, if Parviz were here, would mean nothing. But...
No, it would mean, let's talk some more really fast.
Jason,
how's your grandmother?
Jason, how's your grandma? let me just fill in his role.
Yeah, because he's not here. How is your grandma?
She's just fine. Not 91 and still kicking.
All right. And the gig that we're not allowed to talk about, how's that going for you? You've been there for a week now, yeah?
Yeah, I've been there for a week, and I got to say, waking up at 3 in the morning sucks balls.
Mm.
Yeah, but you get off by like noon, right?
Yeah, you're off by noon, but I mean, at that point, you're wiped, you're tired. I mean, I'm a night person, and it's really tough for me. But the job itself, I love it, and it's going great.
But can't you just, like, write the news before you go to bed, and then in the morning it's just all there waiting for you? I mean, nothing happens overnight.
It's usually pretty much the same, unless, there's an election, and the Democrats win the House. And the Senate.
Didn't was it Bill Murray in Groundhog Day? He pre-records the weather?
And Steve Martin in L.A. Story.
That's what I'm thinking of. I fucked... Not Bill Murray. Steve Martin in L.A. Story.
Yeah.
He pre-records the weather.
The wacky weather.
The wacky, wacky weather. Right.
Which you couldn't do here in L.A. because it was 95 degrees here in November.
All right. Well, listen, what should we be watching this week, my friend?
I give Lost another two shows before I'm done.
No. Tell us something that nobody's watching. I mean, don't tell me what's on the networks. Give me something here that I'm not watching right now.
Oh, geez, I didn't have this prepared, but let's see. This has a bit of popularity, but I don't think enough people are watching it. I really love the show MythBusters on Discovery Channel. And that's a Bay Area show where viewers write in kind of science myths and stuff like that. And they go to all kinds of lengths to debunk them, like shooting a bullet up in the air, will it kill you? And they go through, actual ballistics tests of doing that. And it's a good science show, and it's good for the whole family.
I'm guessing the answer is no, or there would have been lawsuits.
Yes, no. Nobody dies from shooting bullets up in the air.
Isn't that based
on... come down at the right angle.
That's based on a UK show, isn't it?
So much is these days that I wouldn't be surprised if it was. I don't know if it is or not, though.
There's, it's interesting that you should mention that, because I'm looking here. There was an article this week in the LA Times, British shows that are in development in the U.S. Murder Prevention is going to be made as Crime Prevention Union for ABC. Footballers' Wives is going to be made for ABC. Saxondale, which is a comedy right now on the BBC, is going to be developed here for NBC. There must be a list of easily 20 shows. Now, this is weird. Little Britain is going to be made for HBO. How the fuck can they make...
Little America.
I guess I have to change the name.
Little...
And yet these shows don't, they don't always capture what they need to capture. By the way, I'm a huge fan of torrents, and I've been watching all these UK shows as BitTorrents that I've downloaded from the internet. And, you know, do you watch any of those?
No.
You have an assignment.
I downloaded the software once. I couldn't figure it out.
I'd like you to... Okay. I'd like you to watch some UK shows this week.
Okay.
Let's talk about TV in other countries, all right?
You have to send me an email to do it. And
yeah,
I'll do it.
Sure. I'll commit wire fraud. No problems. All right, my friend. Well, listen, thank you very much. Do I owe you $20?
No, not yet.
All right.
We'll see what happens.
Information wants to be free, and Robin Goldstein wants to be famous. I think Stuart Brand said that, too. All right, my friend. Thanks very much.
Thank you. It was fun.
We'll take another break. We'll come back on the other side. Sean, you can stick around with us?
I think I've got to go get my wife.
All right, cool. Then we'll say goodbye to both of you guys.
Take care of yourself, Son of Vista. Have a great week, and I'll talk
Thanks.
To you a little later.
All right, we love you guys. Take care, Jason. Take care, Sean.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Can you stick around?
I can stick around.
All right, good. We'll take a little break. We'll play this week's Road Stories with Brian Cox. We'll come back, and I want to do some more comedy. We were talking before the show about comedy.
Mm-hmm.
I got some Woody Allen doing stand-up.
I think that's great. I've never heard him do stand-up.
I'm guessing people haven't, and I want to talk about that, because I thought a lot about the interview that we did with Allie last week, Allie Waller, and I don't know if there's something there or not, but I want to talk about that. So, we'll take a break. We'll do that. We're listening to Schnauzer Logic, Robin Goldstein, Sherry Stevens. We'll take a break. We'll be back on the other side. We're asking you both to please stick around. I said we're asking you both to please stick around?
Both of you. Like you and I, or like
I don't know.
The other two people listening?
I know that there's more. Yeah. It's almost 1,000. Maybe more than that now.
That's great.
It's amazing. We got to go. All right. Hang around.
That's the trouble around here. Talk, talk, talk. Oh, sometimes I think I must go mad.
We'll be back with more Schnauzer Logic.
Left a note on the refrigerator door. Sat around all day so you could stand me up. Did you think that I would hang around for you forever? I don't wanna do it.
Crack me up.
Oh, yeah.
They're funny.
Keeps me entertained.
Funny, funny comedy.
Those tree-hugging sissies.
Now your host, Brian Cox.
Hey, how you doing? I'm the guy, stand-up comic Brian Cox. Welcome to Road Stories. Here we go. Now, this goes a few years back. I got to tell you, back when I was probably within the first 5 years of my career, I was invited to be the middle act at a comedy club in Winnipeg, Canada. And it was a few years back. The money was okay. The accommodations were first class. I had to do one show a night with two shows Friday and Saturday. The headliner was a guy named Wayne. I can't tell you his last name because he's a self-serving egomaniac. So, for legal reasons, I best keep his last name to myself. But there was a TV show starring Gabe Kaplan with his last name in it. Anyway, after one show, I left the stage and went and stood by the front door to watch Wayne do his thing. Well, after about 20 minutes, a guy came up to me, beautiful woman on each arm, and he mentioned how he'd like to buy me a drink. Well, I thought that was a little funny, you know, but then he mentioned he thought that I was funnier than the headliner. So I joined him for a drink. I could be bought. And I told him, I said, hey, you know, you look just like, and then he cut me off and he goes, I know, in this Belgium type accent. I thanked him for the drink, went into another room just off the back of the comedy room where they had some video gambling machines. So I put in my $10, lost it in about 30 seconds. Just then, who appeared by my side asking what to do on these type of machines? Yeah, the guy who just bought me the drink. I asked where his two lady friends were. He said they had gone up to the room to get his stuff ready for the shoot tomorrow. I promptly show him how to work the machine. Then he asked me in a really cool accent, of course. He said, do you want to have a bit of a competition? Well, I said, what are you thinking? He said, you put $10 in one machine, I'll put $10 in the other machine. Then the person with the least amount of money, after 10 minutes, will buy drinks for the other guy all night long. Oh, I smell hustle here. Okay, so we got a person to be a timekeeper. Again, I told him that he looked just like, and then he told me, shh, please, keep it quiet. He said he was that person and he was in Winnipeg to shoot a movie about hockey. Oh, well, the timekeeper said go. Make a long story short, he was out of money in about 3 minutes. I was the victorious winner. And now the truth, my friends, as far as I know, I am the only person in Canada, maybe even the U.S., ever to kick Jean-Claude Van Damme's ass. That's Road Stories of the Real Highway Comics. I'm Brian Cox.
Here we go.
Welcome back. We're about 30 minutes into the second hour of Schnauzer Logic for Wednesday. It's the day after Election Day here in the United States. It's the 8th of November. Robin Goldstein, Sherry Stevens. Patient says to a doctor, Doctor, I've got a strawberry stuck up my ass. Doctor says, I got some cream for that. All right, so I'm glad that I went with the other joke.
Yeah.
So, here's the problem. I didn't listen to the Brian Cox thing because we were talking during the break.
Uh-huh.
And so, all I heard was the last few seconds where he said, so I beat up Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Damn, I heard that too. It's like, what?
Now I'm thinking, oh, shit, I should have listened to the Brian Cox thing. Oh, by the way, I guess it's okay that Parviz is not here this week. You were here when Parviz mentioned that he had not ever spoken with Brian Cox. We should get Brian Cox on the phone. Were you here last week?
Was I here?
Yeah, and you were sitting over there, I think, and you came in and
my mic didn't work.
Headphones didn't work, yeah. And Parviz was like, we should get Brian Cox on. I go, well, we already had him on. We did? I go, yeah, we had him on. Oh, I don't remember. I wasn't here. I have a fucking interview with Parviz interviewing Brian Cox.
Well, that was 20 episodes ago at least.
So, It's not like each episode is, it's not like it's one a year. It's not like the Schnauzer Logic Christmas special with Andy Williams and Clarissette Lange or whatever.
Whatever happened to her?
I don't know if she's still alive.
She went to jail, didn't she?
For shooting Spider Savage.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That was so sad.
I know.
Was it a mistake? Was it an accident?
Oh, hell no. She was jealous.
Was she?
Yeah. It was a jealous rage.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Don't mess with the French, maybe.
Oh, no.
They wouldn't want to fuck
Not
with them.
Not those French women.
No.
They might be little, but they're feisty.
They are feisty. Doogie Howser. Gay.
Yeah. And he played in Harold and Kumar so well. The
lap
dance.
Well, I think he's always played straight roles.
Yeah, of course he has.
So what I think is so cool about the way that he did it is like, yeah, I'm gay. I'm happy. That's it. I don't know what... I wonder whether somebody was threatening to out him.
To out him, yeah.
Yeah, and that's why he came out with it. But, you know, no ripples?
No.
No nothing? I was at Lance Bass came out, and suddenly, I mean, that was Who's like...
Is that the guy from
yeah.
Grey's Anatomy?
Well, no.
Lance Bass.
NSYNC?
Oh. Oh, yeah. Whatever.
Am I ruining some fantasies for you now?
Not at all.
Okay.
No, that's not my type.
Okay, fine. but big celebrity news this week. And, of course, what is the biggest celebrity story?
Britney Spears is getting a divorce.
Well, can you explain to me why that is news? Because when you look at the LA Times, I mean, I have a couple of pages that I go to every day. I look at the LA Times, look at the San Francisco Chronicle, Washington Post, New York Times, Drudge, Huffington Post. I look at all of them. That's how I kind of get a feeling for what's going on. I kind of pick up the gestalt of the world. And every one of them, every fucking one of them had stories about the election on one side or the other, political aisle, depending upon the slant of the news story. And Britney.
Mm-hmm.
What is the fascination? Explain this to me, because you knew.
I knew because when I start, you know, and I log on to my computer and I, you know, start up a web page, I get my little daily news, and that was on there too. I wouldn't have known otherwise.
Why do you think it made the top stories?
Well, just because Britney Spears is always in the news. I mean, it's either her or Paris Hilton. You know, there's something going on. You know, she's either Britney Spears is driving around with her baby not strapped into a, you know, car seat, or she drops her baby on the head, or she's with a male nanny all the time. So there's something going on, you know, and people just have a fascination for what's going on in other people's lives, like Britney Spears and Paris Hilton.
But I mean, when was the last time that Britney recorded an album? I mean, I understand.
Or toured. I mean, she's...
Right.
She just had her second child, right?
Well, it's not stopping Madonna. I guess she's not actually giving birth, so...
Right.
Okay. Whatever.
No, it's just the whole train wreck. You know,
is that it?
Oh yeah.
And is there
yeah.
fascination with that?
Of course.
And
oh, that Britney, she should have dumped him a long time ago. He never did anything. I mean, this is what my kids say.
Really? Yeah. So I don't know the story behind the two of them. So
I mean, from what I gather from Nicole, you know, who is
okay.
my daughter and
good
an
enough
expert
for me.
In, you know,
all things Britney
or along that line. Is that he, I guess it's Kevin Federer.
Kevin Federline.
Federline.
K-Fed to his friends.
Got it. Was a dancer. And, you know, he married Britney. And so he hasn't worked. He doesn't do anything. He doesn't.
Well, he's a rapper, isn't he? Self-described rapper?
Okay.
Or but maybe a bagger. I get the two confused. Maybe
right.
he's a bagger.
So he, you know, he wasn't good enough for her, and he didn't help her around the house. I don't know where they get this
wow.
info.
Wow. He wasn't good enough for her.
Yeah.
Well, she was like some kind of white trash royalty? I mean...
Well, you know, we all like to poke fun at Britney Spears, but if you really take a look, I mean, she's a very talented kid, and she's
yes,
young.
Beautiful voice. Yep.
A good dancer. You know, she's a very talented person. You know, and she was what? A little mouseketeer.
Yes.
That's how she started
I think that's
out.
Right.
Yep. With Christina Aguilera.
Right.
As well.
Right. And Jason. Jason Nathanson was a mouseketeer.
Seriously?
Would you buy it?
No.
Okay.
So that's what it is. It's you know, the quintessential America's sweetheart, you know, having babies, and now she's getting a divorce. So,
but when you oh, maybe that's it. Okay, so that means she's back on the market.
Yeah.
So
she's probably got another boyfriend by now.
You think so?
Yeah.
You think women like that always need to have boyfriends?
I don't know, but I would imagine that there, you know, someone's always willing to be on their arm.
Just for the money? For the publicity?
Publicity.
You think? I mean, once she's out of the picture. I mean, it's not like Federline. Like Nick Lachey. Nick Lachey actually had a career before hooking up with Jessica Simpson. He seems like a fairly talented guy. I've seen him interviewed independently. He's actually articulate. He's fun. He's got a good sense of humor. He's good looking. So I think independently, he has the ability to continue to be successful in the music business and write songs and perform, and maybe he'll go into acting. Who the hell knows? But I mean, he's got something else going on there. But I don't think, what did K-Fed have? What's he going to go back to?
His marriage to Britney.
That's it.
That was it. That's how he defined himself.
Well, Doogie Howser is gay.
Yeah.
And I'm glad of it.
Who's with her? Who's with him?
Oh, this is Allison Hannigan. This is the People's Choice Awards.
Okay.
So he wasn't announcing that he was gay for the People's Choice Awards.
Okay.
<That's laughs> Best announcement that surprised everyone. But I pulled this off of the LA Times, yeah.
Okay.
So, we were talking before the break about comedy. So, last week we had Ali Lauder on the show with us. Gonna make her famous.
Yeah, she spoke with us for 45 minutes, and that's all we played.
It's perfect, though. It's the rhythm, it's every... But here's what I think is so great. When I play it for people to explain to them what it really is, they immediately understand that that's hack comic. That's hacky comedy. They know right away. Anyhow, Sean and I talked about it after the show last week. We loved having her on. I want to have her back again because she was funny. She was articulate. She was interesting. She's got a perspective that you don't normally get to hear about. So it was terrific. But one of the things that was, I think, surprising to me, and when she comes back, because she volunteered to come back again and get us other comedians on the show, was that she sort of... I don't know. I don't want to put words in her mouth. I don't want to say that she's not really a student of stand-up comedy, but that when she talked about the influences, she mentioned Woody Allen because I think you have to mention the greats, but she really started with Richard Pryor kind of going forward, I think, in terms of comedy albums and what have you. And I was surprised that she didn't have more references going back further into comedy's history. In my mind, folks who were involved in comedy know the history of vaudeville. They know who wrote for Sid Caesar. They know that, for example, Larry Gelbart, who went on to create MASH, was a writer for Sid Caesar, and he learned his comic timing. And so the words that you hear coming out of the mouth of Alan Alda, right, as Hawkeye Pierce, are based in that kind of vaudeville shticky comedy. And so that stuff comes along, and it comes along. And today, it doesn't feel like, to me at least, that are a lot of comedians that have that they're not rooted in that comedy. Now, I'm not saying that comedians today should be doing Borscht Belt comedy, but when you look at any art form, whether it's music, whether it's painting, whether it's writing, the next generation of the art form tends to abstract from the previous generation. And in fact, abstract art was by definition an abstraction of the representational art that came before it, reducing it to its kind of essential elements. I have felt for music for a while now, I'm sure I'm not alone in this, that modern popular music is abstracting from an abstraction from an abstraction. It is so far removed from musical theory. Not all. I mean, you certainly still have musicians like Sting. You've got people who have musicianship in punk bands. You have people who have musicianship in rap and what have you, and I think tend to be very successful. But the kind of stuff that comes in and comes out, that washes with the wave. So it's, you know, this week's number one and next week's remainder bin kind of thing. These are folks that are abstracting from abstractions. They're not grounded in anything, and so they don't have a sense of... It's not the history. It's not like, you need to know where this comes from, but they don't have anything to draw upon. So they're drawing upon what is already a copy of a copy, and it's like making a copy of a Xerox. It loses its definition, and there's no concept there. And so I went into my own private stash, and I found some Woody Allen, and I thought it was worth listening to. We could talk a little bit about it, but at the very least, it's kind of funny. I've got two sets. I think we could play one. We talk a little bit about it, take a break, play another one. Two classic Woody Allen bits. This first one we're playing here was recorded, as a matter of fact, in San Francisco in 1968 at Eugene's. I don't think it's around anymore.
I think it is.
Is it? Yeah. Okay, good. So it's recorded at Eugene's, still around. And
we'll check it out, but it's... Yes, I'm a big authority of
okay,
what goes
cool.
on in San Francisco.
So let me see here. So who did you listen to, by the way, growing up in terms of comedy, or did you listen to comedy?
Well, we had... Stiller and Mira. There was
an
album that we had as a family. It was called You Don't Have to Be Jewish. And it was all these little comedy sketches by Stiller and Mira that were hilarious. And at the time, my sister and I knew them, you know, forwards and backwards. And Bill Cosby was really big for us.
I think Cosby is a master
of the
monologue. And what's interesting is I was thinking today about who's probably the single most popular stand-up comedian today, and got to be Dane Cook. In terms of the young, you know,
young kids.
Who's popular today is Dane Cook. And I mean, we've listened to Dane Cook. I laugh at Dane Cook, but Dane Cook is talking about Starbucks and doing wheelies in parking lots. He's not abstracting anything. And when you listen to this Woody Allen bit, you realize that this is just on the border of insanity, because he creates a fantasy world and then he puts you in it in this real way. So there's an absurdist quality to it that I think is missing from a lot of modern comedy. And I think it's so grounded in reality without the absurdism that what happens is there's nothing really to laugh at. I mean, you can laugh at yourself, but nothing else. Anyhow, I found what I'm looking for here. Let me play this for you guys. This is Woody Allen, and this is called Mechanical Objects. Recorded back in 1968 at Eugene's, which I understand from a good source is still around.
No, we're going to check it out.
Okay, here we go.
Someone asked me if I would tell this story a long time ago. It's a weird story. I was out in Los Angeles, and I was at a party with a very big Hollywood producer. And at that time, they wanted to make an elaborate CinemaScope musical comedy out of the Dewey Decimal System. And they wanted me to work on it. And I go out to the producer's building in downtown Los Angeles, and I walk into his elevator, and there are no people in the elevator, no buttons on the wall or anything. And I hear a voice say, "Kindly call out your flaws, please." And I look around, and I'm alone. And I panic, and I read on the wall that it's a new elevator, and it works on a sonic principle. And it's all sound. All I have to do is say what floor I want to go to, and it takes me there. So I say, 3, please. And the doors close, and the elevator starts going up to 3. And on the way up, I began to feel very self-conscious, because I talk, I think, with a slight New York accent. And the elevator spoke quite well. And I get out, and I'm walking down the hall, and I look back, and I thought I heard the elevator make a remark. And I turn quickly, and the doors close, and the elevator goes down, you know, and I didn't want to get involved at that time with an elevator in Hollywood. But this is the strange part of the story that was the normal part. I have never in my life had good relationships with mechanical objects of any sort, anything that I can't reason with or kiss or fondle. I get into trouble with. I have a clock that runs counterclockwise for some reason, and my toaster pops up my toast and shakes it and burns it, and I hate my shower. If I'm taking a shower and someone in America uses his water, that's it for me, you know. I leap from the tub scalded. I have a tape recorder. I paid $150 for it, and as I talk into it, it goes, "I know, I know." About 3 years ago, I couldn't stand it anymore. I was home one night. I called a meeting of my possessions. I got everything I owned into the living room, my toaster, my clock, my blender. They'd never been in the living room before. And I spoke to them. I opened with a joke. And then I said, "I know what's going on," and cut it out. I have a sun lamp, and as I sit under it, it rains on me, you know? And I spoke to each appliance. I was really articulate. And then I put him back, and I felt good. And 2 nights later, I'm watching my portable television set. And the set begins to jump up and down. And I go up to it, and I always talk before I hit. And I said, "I thought we had discussed this. What's the problem?" And the set kept going up and down, so I hit it. And it felt good hitting it. And I beat the hell out of it as well. I was really great. I tore off the antenna. and I felt very virile. And 2 days later, I go to my dentist in New York. I had gone to my dentist, but I had a very deep cavity, and he had sent me to a chiropodist. And I go into a building, Midtown, New York, and I have those elevators. And I hear a voice say, "Kindly call out your floors, please." And I say, 16. And the doors close, and the elevator starts going up to 16. And on the way up, the elevator says to me, "Are you the guy that hit the television set?" I felt like an ass, you know? And it took me up and down fast between floors. And it threw me off in the basement. And it yelled out something that was anti-Semitic. And the upshot of the story is that day, I call my parents. My father was fired. He was technologically unemployed. My father worked for the same firm for 12 years. They fired him. They replaced him with a tiny gadget this big. It does everything that my father does, only it does it much better. The depressing thing is my mother ran out and bought one.
All right. Now, that's a very different style of comedy, right? I mean, yeah. First of all, it's slow. I mean,
it's deliberate.
It's very slow and very deliberate. And he over-enunciates the ends of his
New York
words.
Accent.
Which I think is interesting, but it's absurd. And yet he presents an absurd premise. And then you hear fire engines?
I hear fire engines.
But we don't smell anything.
We don't smell anything, so
right,
we're good.
So we're good to go. All right. So he starts with this absurd premise, and then once you're drawn into that, he can do anything that he wants to do. So I have images. I mean, I can see him hitting the television. I think that is the best kind of comedy, are the comedians that draw these pictures in your mind. I'm trying to think of who does that today, who's like that.
Today. That's, yeah.
I think it's a challenge.
It is a challenge because it's a different, I mean, people find different things funny, you know.
Well, that's an interesting question. Do you think our sense of humor changes over time? And if so, what?
Well, the target audience, our audience has changed.
Yeah,
you know,
but comedians don't, I mean, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I think the folks that I know who are comedians, they're not performing to reach a particular audience. I mean, they may be marketing themselves. The Dane Cooks of the world may be marketing themselves, but a laugh is a laugh is a laugh. And that's really what you care about. I mean, you know, people are doing material because they think that it's going to get them laughs, not because they think it's going to reach a particular demographic.
Right, but people find things... well, how do I want to say this? Things that were funny 20 years ago may not be funny today just because everybody is so aware of being politically correct or, you know, just times change and situations change. I mean, like this particular piece from Woody Allen, he's talking about an elevator that, you know, does voice recognition, which we don't find so unusual these days.
No.
You know, so back then it was truly absurd.
But I think that, people can still recognize the fact that you have difficulty with your appliances.
Right.
And he's anthropomorphized them, right? And now he's having a relationship with them. And
they're telling on him.
And they're smarter than he is. They're getting the better of him.
Right.
In a way that's getting the better of him. And what I think is, just that idea, for example, couldn't that be used successfully? The idea that we anthropomorphize the world around us in a way so that a show like Joey, right, which was a really kind of mediocre comedy, would have some dimension there, right? Because now we've got a character relating to something that can't relate back, and so now you're in the character's world. But without understanding that that's a comic device that can be used, I think you're limited. And that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. Let me play one more, okay? Because I think we'll enjoy this one, and then we'll try to get out of here today. This may be his most famous. It's called The Moose, and I think people you may have actually heard this one, but this one of my favorites. We'll play this one for you here. This is and by the way, this was recorded in 1965, so 40 years ago,
yeah.
Right? And yet I think this material would get a laugh today. It's his delivery is slow. and deliberate. It doesn't have that kind of zing, zing, zing pacing, but it doesn't sound like Allie. No, he doesn't have that going on there. All right, how's that soda? Is it good?
It's done.
All right, there we go. Let's see. It's track number 6. Okay, here we go.
I shot a moose once. I was hunting upstate New York, and I shot a moose, and I strap him onto the fender of my car, and I'm driving home along the West Side Highway. But what I didn't realize was that the bullet did not penetrate the moose. It just creased his scalp, knocking him unconscious. And I'm driving through the Holland Tunnel, and the moose woke up. So I'm driving with a live moose on my fender. And the moose is signaling for a turn, you know? And there's a law in New York State against driving with a conscious moose on your fender Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturday. And I'm very panicky. And then it hits me. Some friends of mine are having a costume party. I'll go. I'll take the moose. I'll ditch him at the party. It wouldn't be my responsibility. So I drive up to the party, and I knock on the door. The moose is next to me. My host comes to the door. I say, hello. You know the Solomons. We enter. The moose mingles. Did very well. Scored. Some guy was trying to sell him insurance for an hour and a half. 12 o'clock comes. They give out prizes for the best costume of the night. First prize goes to the Berkowitzes, a married couple dressed as a moose. The moose comes in second. The moose is furious. He and the Berkowitzes lock antlers in the living room. They knock each other unconscious. Now I figure here's my chance. I grab the moose, strap him to my fender, and shoot back to the woods. But I got the Berkowitzes. So I'm driving along with two Jewish people on my fender. There's a law in New York State. Tuesdays, Thursdays, and especially Saturday. The following morning, the Berkowitzes wake up in the woods in a moose suit. Mr. Berkowitz is shot, stuffed, and mounted at the New York Athletic Club. And the joke is on them because it's restricted.
Well, there you go. It's a different kind of comedy.
Mm-hmm. But it's time, you know, it's kind of classic.
Yeah.
It's funny. Clearly it stands the test of time.
He clearly wrote that. It comes from a literary mind.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's a funny story that could be like a short story that he wrote out and then put his own touch on it in performance. So he started with a story that he wanted to tell. I wonder how many stand-up comedians today start with a joke and then try to develop a story around mm-hmm. it. I know that that's a challenge when doing humor, because otherwise you can merely wind up with a funny story, and very few people will pay money in a comedy club to hear you tell funny stories. They want jokes. They want the jokes. Anyhow, you hear that music?
I do.
Means our time is just about up.
This went fast.
It did go fast.
Mm-hmm. For not having anything to talk about.
I never have anything to talk about. All right. Hey, thanks so much for coming.
My pleasure.
I appreciate that. I know you bought a couch. You're all nervous about your couch.
I'm nervous about my couch.
You think it's too big?
It's the biggest fucking couch you can ever imagine seeing in a room.
It's a sectional.
It's a sectional. It's a U-shaped sectional. It takes up the entire room. It's beautiful.
What else do you have in the room? What else do you want to put in the room?
Well, not much now.
But I mean,
it'll be fine. I just, you know, I have to get used to it.
What color is it?
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful chenille green with, you know, perfect. The color's perfect. and it's very comfy and cozy. So.
I mean, is there enough room in the room to be able to walk into?
Oh, yeah,
you don't have
yeah,
to crawl over the couch to get to
just,
the couch.
I like an open space. The living room I have is really quite big, but I, and I like it open, but it, this kind of cuts it off, so I'll get used to it.
You can turn it to a different angle?
We've been doing that.
Okay.
Every angle you can imagine.
There's only 360 of them.
Yeah, well, it's made a few of those. So.
Okay.
But we'll figure it out. And you know what? If I don't like it, I'll take it back.
That's the beauty of living in this
country.
But
you were up late, you know, watching the, you know...
2 a.m. 2 a.m.
watching the election results, and I was, you know, tossing and turning because I thought I spent too much money on a couch.
Well, but I mean, if it's what you want, there isn't too much money.
But I don't know if... But, you know, now I have to go buy a television.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's best part.
I know. I'm saving the best for last, apparently.
Got to be 50-inch, we're thinking.
Well, you know what they do say.
What?
Bigger is better. But 46 inches, I was thinking.
46 inches.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But now that I've got everything in the living room, you know, maybe I'll have you come over and give me your advice on...
My pleasure. I love spending
size.
Other people's money.
Yep.
All right. And there you go. And that, my friends, is a show. Next week, I don't know. I think Parviz will be back. Hopefully Sean will be in the studio with us. Maybe you can
great.
Be here. That would be terrific. I'd like to get Brian Cox on. I'd like to get Robin Goldstein back. We lost Robin over
great.
The summer. Robin, I got another email from Robin recently. So I forwarded it on to him. He's like, whatever happened to you? And I was like, my mom passed away. We had stuff going on. I've been dealing with all of that stuff.
Yeah.
I mentioned to you during the break. The guy that we sold the house to had a yard sale on our property of our stuff. Because we told him, he said, well, I'll clear it out. But I didn't realize he was actually going to sell stuff. Good times.
Yep.
And he bought oil and filled up the tank. I go, well, he goes, well, you got to heat the place. So
he's taking possession.
But I don't know if he's so much a buyer as he is a tenant. All right. Until next week, I love you, Mom. I love you, Dad. I miss you both. Show up. Pay attention. Tell the truth. Don't be attached to the outcome. www.schnauzerlogic.com. That is a website, robin@schnauzerlogic.com. That is the email address. We're over on the iTunes Music Store. Thank you all for the reviews. We are like total popularity at this point, which is wonderful, and that's the best place to find the program. Tell your friends. We got people listening all over the world, and we love you guys to listen. Let me know what you want as a ringtone. We'll get them up on that new WTube.com.
That's great.
And until next week, take care of yourself. Have fun. Bye-bye.
This is over now, and you just got to deal with it.
I want you to know it's over.
It's over, Jenny. It's over!
It's over, Harvey. I'm sorry. I need to get on with my life.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Elvis has left the building.
I'm in my vagina.